good morning, good evening, good afternoon, wherever and whenever you happen to be listening to us here in this great world brought together by the internet, also known as the World Wide Web. The last three guys to do a podcast are back for our 32nd edition. John Morgo with Leon Brown and Daniel Bolton. We're going to get right to our special guest in a moment, but we got a little bit of business to take care of beforehand, and that is to express congratulations to Daniel. His son is enrolling at Georgia State this fall. Daniel, Daniel, congratulations.
Man, thank you. Thank you very much. Tough decision for him. He was choosing between Kennesaw State and Columbus State, so he chose Georgia State, which is a good thing for him. I'm trying to get him to stay on campus.
that was the question I was going
to
ask.
Yeah, I'm trying to get him out the house, but we'll see. But, yeah, I'm so proud of him, man. He's done a great job this year, and shout out to the class of 2019.
All right, we'll talk more about that a little later on, but right now we want to bring in our special guest. You may not be aware of this, but WNBA training camp got underway today, and we are privileged to be joined by the head coach of the Atlanta Dream, Coach Nikki Collin, graciously getting some time, donating some of her time to the last three guys to do a podcast. Coach Collin calling in on our line. Coach, how are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
We're hanging in there. We're hanging in there again. First of all, thank you so much for joining us here on the last three guys to do a podcast. We know you're incredibly busy. First of all, first day of training camp over at Georgia State. What did you see? What does your team look like heading into this campaign?
Well, you know, we're a little shorthanded right now. We have a couple starters that are just finishing up overseas assignments, so a little slimmer on numbers, but I was really excited about kind of our veteran leadership from our returnees and the energy that they brought to the gym, and that really carried through to, you know, our new rookies and new players to the franchise. So felt really good about what we got done today.
And also, Coach, Angel McCautry, again, you announced that she will not be participating in some of training camp as she comes back from her injuries. Do you expect her back in the lineup for opening day in a couple weeks?
Absolutely not. Okay. I can say that definitively.
Yeah, you want to take some time. You want to take be careful with her. And also, you're mentioning some of your players are overseas right now. They will be trickling back in, I suppose. How is that going to affect your plans for training camp in terms of what you have, who you know is coming in, and what they're going to see when they when we get to the opening day game, I believe, against Dallas in a couple weeks.
Correct. Well, I think, you know, no coach wants to see two of their starters and really a huge free agent signing that we had in Haley Peters not here in training camp. But I do think that what it does, you know, the silver lining, the unintended consequences of, you know, the overseas assignments is that it gives some players like a Lynetta Kaiser, like an Amani McGee Stafford, and Marie Gulich, who we got on a draft day trade from Phoenix. It just gives them more opportunity. I mean, Elizabeth was our starting center last year, you know, played just under 30 minutes a game, and anticipate she's going to play a lot of minutes for us this year. But as you're trying to finalize your roster and build depth and figure out who the right pieces are, you know, sometimes when you have players missing, it gives opportunity where you wouldn't have seen it as much. So really gives them good opportunity to play minutes in our preseason games next week and give us a really good look at them.
Yeah, you got two preseason games up in Uncasville, Connecticut, where the Mohegan Sun, where Connecticut plays. And also, and this I'm very interested in, you're playing down in Albany, Georgia, at the Albany Civic Center against Washington. Tell us how did that come about? What did you were looking for a place outside of Atlanta to try and do a preseason game?
You know, we've talked about the concept of taking it on the road, and by that, you know, not taking it far on the road, but
yes,
you know, kind of reaching out to other parts of Georgia. This very much a situation from a former season ticket holder that is kind of involved in the state government and had connections, and hey, this is a, you know, a place that would be really interested in bringing you there. So, you know, they kind of set up the whole thing. We obviously found a team to play, but they're covering our expenses for it, you know. And so we're kind of excited to see, you know, what kind of, you know, fan base we get there in southern Georgia and how that maybe translates. So kind of a unique opportunity. And, you know, it's something maybe you know, we'll do regularly. I'm not saying every year, but, you know, we've talked about Savannah. We've talked about different places in Georgia, kind of reaching across the state.
And Coach, 23-11 last season, second in the regular season rankings. What did you think last team lacked that would possibly put them over the top this year?
Well, I think you know, where our league is a little unlike the NBA, and the NBA is so analytical, and you see very few traditional centers. The WNBA still has, you know, some unique centers in Griner and Cam Beige and Sylvia Fowles, who are, you know, more traditional low post players. And so, you know, for us, it was about finding, if you can't find someone like that, then you want someone who can drag those people out of the paint. And so a big part of, you know, what we wanted to do in the off season was find a post player that could get a Brittany Griner out of the lane and create space for, you know, our athletic wings like Hayes and Sykes and Bentley, so that they can get into space and score, kick out, and have multiple options. And, you know, we still, even though we set a franchise record for made threes, we were still in the bottom third in the league in threes made. Okay. So, you know, those were two things. We led the league in defense last year and most defensive statistical categories. And we want that still. You know, we want to continue to be a good defensive team, but we want to continue to kind of be better on offense, be more balanced on offense, have great spacing. And so, you know, we tried to go out in free agency and find spacers.
Speaking with WNBA head coach Nikki Collin of the Atlanta Dream here on the Last Three Guys Do a Podcast, John Morgo, Leon Brown, Daniel Bolton. Leon's got some questions for you, Coach.
All right.
All right. How do you believe you're going to fill that void that's left?
Okay, I can definitely cannot hear his question, so you may have to relay.
Okay, no problem. So I'm sorry. He's asking how are you going to fill
the void of Angel's absence?
How are you going to fill the void of Angel's absence as until she is back?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's not a one person situation. You know, it's kind of the sum of the parts. She, you know, was averaging 16 points and, you know, was a really good rebounder at the small forward position for us a year ago. And so, you know, it gives more opportunity to someone like Brittany Sykes, who is an electric scorer, an incredible athlete, probably as freakishly athletic as you'll see in our game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, someone like her. But also, we went out in free agency with the signing of Haley Peters and then our draft day trade to go get Nia Coffey, who 2 years ago was the fifth pick in the draft out of Northwestern, but just kind of maybe didn't get the consistent minutes so far in the league. But she's 6'1", and, you know, has the size, strength, can give us some of the rebounding. Haley Peters is 6'3", and gives us length and the ability to stretch the floor and shoot the three. We're not going to replace Angel. You don't just replace a two-time Olympian with a single player. But I think, you know, why we were effective last year wasn't because of one player or two players. It was our system. It was our energy. It was our camaraderie. It was our team defense. It was, you know, kind of truly that the sum of the parts really were, you know, more important than the actual parts. And so, you know, we'll kind of stay true to that. We, you know, I think the last I saw, our odds in Vegas after finishing second a year ago and going 5-1 down the stretch without Angel.
Right.
You know, our odds in Vegas are still 6 best to win a WNBA championship. So, you know, that's fine with me. No coach has a true problem with being an underdog and, you know, having a bunch of players that are playing with a chip on their shoulder and, you know, trying to gain the respect that they probably deserve.
Yes. Also, I noticed you were stating that you wanted to get some length to try to get the more traditional centers out the lane, like the Brittany Griners and such. So I understand you guys went overseas and drafted you a real strong 20-year-old center.
Yeah, I can't hear him at all. That's like a whisper. Sorry.
That's strange, because I actually put my mic to his face. He was talking about you went to, you drafted a 20, from overseas. You drafted a 20-year-old center, I believe he was.
Yuriu Lee?
Lee, I think he was talking about.
Yes, yes. So talk about her?
Yes, please.
Yeah, she's someone who, you know, And the NBA has similar draft rules that are a little bit different, but international players have, the only time they're draft eligible is the calendar year they turn 20.
Okay.
So Lee just turned 20. There's very few 20-year-olds that are ready to play in our league, you know, and so she was someone that we knew when we drafted wasn't going to come over right away. And maybe wasn't even ready to come over. Put up staggering numbers in China this year. Played on the same team with Nneka Abumake, and played in a championship. So very, very talented. But we also knew with her kind of military team commitment, her national team commitments, that she wasn't going to come over. But, you know, sometimes drafting at the end of the third round, the odds of a third round pick making your team mm-hmm. are very, very slim. So you're talking about someone who will give you depth in training camp. Right. And sometimes drafting a player like her gives you an asset. So she doesn't come over this year. She still becomes an asset so that at the time that she's ready, and maybe it's in 2 years after, you know, the 2020 Olympics, maybe it's the 21 season, you know, she's now 22 years old, more prepared to come over here, and we have her rights. You know, she's 6'7", has the ability to stretch all the way to the arc. So really has a chance to be a special player. But it's not a short-term, it's more of a long-term decision.
All right, Coach, we're speaking with Nikki Collin here, head coach of the Atlanta Dream, here on The Last Three Guys to do a podcast. Another thing I wanted to ask you, Coach, we keep talking about the your draft day mentality where you kind of made trades with other teams rather than that's really the big news, and not who you drafted. Was that more of a... where did that decision come from, where you were thinking more of getting pieces from other teams, setting things up that way instead of kind of going through the draft?
Yeah, it was, you know, there were players we liked in this draft. But when you, Cheryl Reeve, the head coach at Minnesota, made a statement to me at WNBA meetings this spring, and she said, you know, when you're happy in October, it usually means you're not happy in April. And what I mean, you know, the concept of if you have a great...
Oh, wait a minute. Looks like... Coach, you there? Coach, are you... Coach Collin? I think... Well, the line is still good, but I'm trying to see if we still...
There we go. A certain scenario happened with this draft.
Okay.
That we already had a draft day trade in place with Phoenix. So,
okay.
You know, the minute Washington picked Kiara Leslie at 10... We had 3 minutes, and we're on the phone with Phoenix, you know, kind of getting the trade done. So it was kind of all prearranged in the situation where the person on the board wasn't available that we maybe wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, sometimes the fact that, you know, Vegas ended up taking Jackie Young first in the draft made Nia Coffey a little more expendable them. And so that actually... We agreed on that trade in principle before midnight, didn't announce it till the next day because it was a four-team, you know, multiplayer, multi-pick trade. But, you know, we were able to, with the draft and the trades, kind of identify the three areas that we wanted to address. One was depth at the point. We will lose Alex Bentley potentially 3 to 5 games for Eurobasket because she has a Belarus passport. And that European qualifier happens in late June, early July. Right. So that's where Maite Cazorla came into play for us. With Gulich, we were able to kind of get a replacement for Damaris Dantas, who we lost in free agency. And, you know, and then we were able to go and get Coffey, who gave us, you know, a bigger wing. Certainly not Angel, but someone a little more like Angel in strength, athleticism, rebounding. So we were able to go and in, you know, a few hours kind of identify and take care of the needs that we thought we had as a team.
Okay. Coach, Seattle, I believe they are the defending champion this season. What do you need to do to take down the Storm?
Well, you know, they're in a unique situation because Breanna Stewart, who is the MVP of the league last year, as well as the finals MVP, as well as the world championship MVP, you know, tore her Achilles in, you know, the Euroleague championship series. And so, you know, I think there's a lot of, you know, for us, you know, we were actually the only team in the league last year to take the season series from them.
Okay.
As we beat them 2 out of 3. And a lot of that is, you know, our strength, and it's just the nature of sports in general. Their strength was they were athletic at the 4-5 and with Jewel Lloyd at the 2. And with Hayes, who was an all-league defender, Breland, who was first-team all-league defender, and Elizabeth Williams, who probably should have been an all-league defender, we matched up pretty well with them athletically at the positions that they usually had an advantage at. So, you know, there's a lot of good teams. I'm not sure going into the season that they're even the favorite at this point, although, you know, until someone takes the title from them, they're certainly the defending champions. But, you know, I think LA's added incredible depth with the trade for Chinea Bumake. I think Washington, with Emma Mieseman coming back after taking a year off to concentrate on her Belgian national team commitments, I think they've added, you know, an all-star caliber player to their lineup. So it's a lot of really, really good teams in this league.
And, Coach, one more thing before we let you go. It was announced this week that Twitter will be live streaming about 20 games, and CBS Sportsnet just inked a deal to broadcast another selection of games. It seems the WNBA is starting to grow just a little bit this summer, even incrementally. Have you seen this growth on your level? Does it seem like that the league is getting a bigger footprint in public consciousness?
That certainly is the goal, and I think, you know, the marketing firm that the league hired in the off season has been very progressive in their thinking, very aggressive in the marketing plans in terms of how they're going to market the players in this league. I think, you know, with Twitter and with CBS Sports, it's more national exposure, where so much of our league has been regional exposure.
Right.
And so I think all those things help. We obviously only got one ESPN game this year, and so, you know, this gives us, you know, 13 more opportunities to be on national TV or Twitter, which is free and available for anyone and everyone. And so I think all of those are great opportunities for us.
All right, Coach, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you so much for taking time out to join the last three guys to do a podcast. Hopefully we can have you back on sometime during the season, and good luck in your exhibition games, that first game with Dallas, and that trip down to Albany next week.
Perfect. Thank you.
You're welcome. That was head coach Nikki Collin joining us here. And if you want to sponsor our call-in line, you can do so. Contact me, John Mordo, or us here, the last three guys to do a podcast, Daniel Bolton, Leon Brown. Interesting conversation with Coach Collin talking about the WNBA Atlanta Dream. Again, she's going to be without Angel McCautry for the first couple weeks. But she seems optimistic that they can survive having that player not with them, but during the first couple weeks of the season.
Yeah, you know, they got to ask more from Tiffany Hayes. You know, their seasoned veteran, she has the upper scoring.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're going to expect more out of their new, hopefully they could get some production out of their new draft picks.
Right.
You know, but that's a heck of a void. That's like the Raptors missing Kawhi Leonard for like the first 3 months of the season.
Yeah.
My goodness, what do you do about that? You know, that's her, the coach's marriage will be tested.
Yes.
Early on.
Yes, but again, this is the WNBA, and hopefully we'll be able to talk some more about the WNBA during this season, because it's a very interesting league. I think there's a lot of good basketball to be played, and I think we've had this conversation before about how maybe the WNBA or women's college basketball kind of like more at a pure level. More they go more fundamentals, more back to basics. The Euro step, I think we all agree that the Euro step needs to go. I think Daniel, if you were commissioner, what would you get of the NBA? And this is kind of where I wanted to go a little bit later. We could do it now and then get back to it. Commissioner of the NBA, what one thing would you do to improve play?
Man, that's a good question. You know what, John? The Euro step is correct.
Yeah.
I think we have to start calling that. I've seen it so many times. I've seen it at least 5 times in the Toronto game today.
Mm-hmm.
Giannis Antetokounmpo does it, and he's mastered it.
Yeah.
Basically. But of course, he's from Greece, but, you know, he's mastered that thing. I just think that the refs might need to just kind of get a lean on, and the league probably just needs to get a lean on, hey, listen, what is traveling? Because we've really gotten away from that. Are we going to call traveling or are we not? Are we just going to call it off the ball or off of a pivot foot? Or are we going to call it when they're going to the rack?
Right, because they take five steps.
Yes, they're taking five steps, right?
Right.
You understand that, historically speaking, traveling is when a non-star player takes three steps or more.
Exactly. Exactly. That's the point we can get to a little bit later. So that's kind of the thing, though. It's got to be the rules for everybody. Either everyone gets everyone follows it, or no one follows it. We've got a situation right now where it's some people follow it, and of course, as you said, Leon, it's the best people don't follow it. And where is this going to lead if it keeps happening?
Well, you know, the Eurostep has been around, you know, for ages. We're talking like Elgin Baylor is the person who actually made the Eurostep famous.
Okay.
Before they were calling it the Eurostep.
Right.
You know, it was just called something else. You know, maybe some people say it was just called traveling.
Right.
But, you know, it's been around for a while. And, you know, you got people like the James Hardens, the Giannis's, and, you know, but now they have another, the step back three.
Okay.
Where players are taking another step.
They have to get rid of that. That's step back three. And that's James Harden.
Oh, yeah.
That's his thing. And that is a brand new thing for us this year.
Yeah.
James Harden, you're the back step.
Yeah, where he goes forward, then takes two. Then, yeah.
Exactly. Now you can step back and take the three, but Harden steps in and then steps back. So that's traveling.
Yeah. Yeah. I seen it twice today with J.J. Redick. Hit two great three-pointers today. It's arguably Damian Lillard won the series for the Blazers with the step back three from like 40 feet.
Yeah.
And Paul George's face.
I don't know how he hit that shot. I really don't.
Yeah. So, you know, a matter of fact, and James Harden did it last night to ice the game for Houston in Kevin Durant's face.
It's interesting that we talk about that because they also missed a call. I don't know if you guys saw it, but in overtime, they missed an offensive foul that should have been clearly called on Harden. He iced the game with the layup.
Oh, you're talking about with the floater.
Yeah, the floater. Draymond Green was clearly in position, and they just completely did not call that foul.
Yeah, they're not.
You know what, they're not going to do that because game one, Houston felt like they were robbed.
Right.
Right? So, of course, they're going to get that back. But that's what we got to stop doing.
Yeah.
Stop playing this tick-for-tack kind of game. Especially the referees have not been really good in this postseason.
I don't think they've been really good across the board in terms of every sport.
Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely.
It's been a very big year to kind of beat up on the referees this season.
But I haven't seen enough of baseball to get on the umpires yet. But I'm pretty sure that everybody's strike zone is different now.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
I just want to be consistent, really.
Well, absolutely. It's a difference in baseball, though, because, you know, granted, we don't want to see a batter at the bottom of the ninth inning called out for watching a pitch that's a strike. But at the same time, we don't want to see him walked either.
Yes.
Right.
So the umpires have to call it how they see it. Versus in football.
Determine the outcome.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Versus football or basketball. The referees are going to tuck that whistle about the front within, especially in overtime.
Yeah.
They're not determined. No. Yes. Was James Harden could have been called for a charge? Yeah. He could have. Yeah. Could have. But you know, he's not going to get. Just like in the, you know, we'll say the most notorious game that the referees might have missed a call allegedly in. Mm-hmm. And that's a big allegedly with a capital allegedly.
Yes.
And that's during the New Orleans and
Rams
game.
Rams game.
Of course. Yes.
They allegedly missed a call because they're not going to call that. They won't be. You know, these referees got to have lives.
Yeah,
and they will not be. You know, these guys have Twitter accounts. You know, there's ways for people to get your address. You have upset gamblers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the referees like, I'm not going to have that pressure on me. So therefore, they're tucking that whistle, no matter how egregious of the miss it was. Is you know, just like for example, the one of the most famous game winners, I feel, within my lifetime was when Jordan scored on Brian Russell in 1998
yeah.
finals?
97.
97.
It was a push. He pushed him. Yeah. Offensive foul.
Right.
And Jordan announced that during his during his Hall of Fame speech, and invited Brian Russell to, hey, if you feel you were wrong, you could put on the shorts again. We could go off and, you know, play.
And I'll still wipe the floor with him.
Right. But the referees weren't calling that. Not the last 10 seconds of the game. That's not going to happen. So I don't think.
Well, against Michael.
They're not calling that, especially against Michael.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, and nobody really wants to see that, you know. You know, I think we have to be pure towards that. And I'll say that even if it's my team that lost, I don't want to see the referees. I don't want to see a Virginia, the way Virginia won that game against what was the team they won?
Auburn.
Auburn? Yeah. Well, was it a foul?
Right.
Yeah. He invaded his space.
Yeah.
But man, I don't want to see the referee. I don't want to see the game won at the free throw line. I'm sorry. As a fan.
Right, as a fan, you want to see them. I think that's what we all want to do. We want to see this game decided on the court by the people involved. But then again, we don't want to see the game devolved into thug ball.
Yes, that absolutely.
And so it's a fine line that the teams have to walk, and everybody's walking it. And I think the problem is they're walking it in a manner that no one is really satisfied with.
I mean, no, people are never going to be real satisfied.
Yeah, that's the thing.
You know, because we got to look at, I miss, like, for example, we remember a great basketball player by the name of Sean Kemp. He's like my favorite power forward of all time, right?
Oh, yeah.
The way he used to dunk on people and then point them out, man, that man would get called for a technical, police would be called, and he had to endure 2 weeks of sensitivity training.
Yeah.
Not only that, he would also be called for traveling and dribbling. Because the way he used to
and child support.
Which he's probably been talking for. But, you know, yeah, he, in today's NBA, of course.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Especially the, probably one of his most memorable dunks when he did it over Alistair.
Oh, yeah.
And then pointing at him.
Yeah, yes, yeah, so I'm talking about it, too.
Easily.
In ejection.
Finger thing at him. Yeah, he would have, yeah. Oh, man, he would have been suspended 3 games.
Yeah, he would have been. But that's kind of the thing. What do we want to see the NBA become? What is the type of game that we would like to see in terms of
evolving?
It is.
So, I mean, it's kind of hard. I think that, and we can sit here and we can say, oh, the refs need to do a better job, but that's just part of the game.
Right. It is.
I mean, like I said, every play, every second is a judgment call for them.
Yeah. What I don't want to see, I don't want to see LeBron James call for a technical foul like the one he called when he dunked on Jason Terry in 2014, where they Jason Terry was talking trash in the media, so therefore they caught him unaware underneath the basket, and LeBron James called an alley-oop and caught it, and Jason Terry landed on the ground, and LeBron just looked at him and called for a tee. I don't want to see that.
Yeah. Right.
You know,
it's basketball, man. I mean, like this is one of the more ego driven sports.
Absolutely. Yes. You know, you're getting a tech. Like I seen Joel Embiid, you know, come on, last series when they played. What was the team they played against in the first series?
Brooklyn.
Okay, they go. They're playing against the Brooklyn Nets. Joel Embiid goes on the baseline and dunks on like two players, right?
And then we had the pushing, shoving, right. The Backman Turner overdrive song, people pushing, people shoving.
Man, but he did something lighter than that, though. He just pointed at somebody.
Right.
No contact was made, and the guy was nowhere in the camera side. He just pointed at him. T.
Yeah.
I don't want to see that, because, you know, you're just giving the team, unearned points.
It's funny you mention that, because I think that what we've also seen out of the referees is that they just want to be protected. They just want to have. I think they're tired of the players coming up. It's almost like a bullying situation.
Yeah, guys getting in your face saying, "I didn't do that.
I didn't do that."
Yeah, exactly.
And now they're getting more and more aggressive. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
So now they're protected.
Yeah.
You see, so I guess that's one of the things. Listen, man. You're going to make a call.
Be consistent.
Yeah, exactly. You're going to make a call that you're not going to like. But don't go and attack it. I'll never forget when Tim Duncan got teed and he was on the bench.
Wow.
You remember that?
Yeah.
Tim Duncan gets teed, he's on the bench, and he didn't even say anything. But that referee, whoever, I can't remember who it was, but that referee had it out for him.
Okay.
And they didn't too much, he didn't too much care for Tim.
Okay, wow.
But who would?
Right.
Yeah.
Who wouldn't?
I mean, yeah, you know, Tim Duncan?
It's Tim Duncan. That's Mr. Fundamental.
Right. We're talking about the gentleman who didn't start playing basketball until he's in college.
Exactly.
Yes.
Come on, man. Not only was he one of the best power forwards to ever play basketball, but man, he was probably one of the nice guys. I don't think he talked any trash to anybody.
No, he didn't.
He didn't.
He was a...
You can talk to everybody around the league.
He was a true professional. Yeah, he was a professional.
Have you ever...
Larry Fitzgerald is the
right.
You never hear anybody say a bad thing about Larry Fitzgerald.
That's like Kawhi Leonard getting a tech.
Right.
Yeah. Great game for Kawhi Leonard. 39 points in that victory by the Raptors. That series now even up at 2. Denver and Portland going on right now. Denver up by 5 halfway through the first quarter. They need a win to get that game squared at 2-2. So basically, that Toronto-Philadelphia, it's now a best of 3 series.
It is. And the funny part about it is that... And the funny part about that is
it's a 2-2 series.
Right.
So with it being a 2-2 series.
Yeah, it's best out of three
it's
now.
It's best out of three now. And man, talking about an incredible victory by Toronto today. But listen, Philadelphia, and we've said this before, Philadelphia is going to struggle if Embiid and Simmons are not playing well. They had a combined 17 points today.
Well, Embiid, he had a great game 3, and then he only had about 8 points today.
Yeah, and Simmons had 9, or it was the other way around.
Yes.
But that was my whole thing about them.
Yeah, because, like I said, Embiid basically took today off after that great game to give Philadelphia the win in Game 3. So, again, Toronto and Philadelphia, it's a best-of-3 situation. Leon, who's a best of three situation? Who's his favor?
If Philadelphia could wake up, because you know Philadelphia has a very deep, they're very top heavy, but they don't really have much of a bench,
right?
And some may fault that their lack of depth to the reason why we see such inconsistent play out of the Embiids and the Ben Simmons. It's looking like Jimmy Butler or bust.
Yeah,
right about the minute. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, last game all the starters had double figures, and I'm not talking about the last game. I'm talking about the game 3. All stars were in double figures. They had pretty much all around effort, and they came out the victory. This particular game, like you said, it was Joel Embiid with a real 8 points. I've seen him missing free throws. You know, he's playing like he's injured.
Well, I think they came out and said that he was ill anyway or sick or something like that. But let me tell you something. If there's something wrong with your star player, which he is the guy, he's the most important guy.
Right.
Then
right.
Something's got to be wrong with your medical staff.
Right.
If he's sick, give him some IV fluids. If he's hurt, somebody figure out why he's hurt. And bandage him up. Well, he got to go out there and play.
Well, remember, we keep talking about MJ. Remember MJ in the flu game?
In the flu, come on, man. Yeah, exactly. No excuses. That man scored, 44 points?
Yes,
sir. In that game?
Yeah.
To tie the series up?
Scotty had to pick him up and carry him off the court.
Man, they said he was about to pass out at least 25 times. That whole day, he was just not up to it. But guess what? He does. That's what great players do.
They do their job.
They have that will, and they understand their job, like you just said, right?
So we got to go. So let's travel 3,000 miles out west. We have Mr. Curry, who is just stinking up the joint right about the minute, but he has a dislocated finger.
Yes, but the thing with Curry is that he has Durant, but Durant's not going to be enough if you want to beat Houston. I just don't think he is. Klay's got to do a little bit better stepping up. He's played okay, but Andre Iguodala has been sensational, and he's always sensational around this time. Houston just wanted that game, man. They understood the situation. If they go down 3-0,
it's over.
It's over, and this could be a gentleman's sweep maybe in 5.
Right.
It still could be.
Potentially.
It depends on game 4 tomorrow. It depends on game 4 tomorrow.
Yeah, game 4 is a definite must win. I just think that Golden State is just, they're just so far ahead of everybody, And I think they're going to take game four. And I think we're going to see the gentlemen sweep in five.
Yeah. So you think, so you got Golden State down to win game four, huh?
Yes, I do. I think Curry understands now. Listen, I gotta will this thing. Yeah. I gotta make this thing happen. Durant's going to score 35, 40 points. We know that.
Yeah. So it's just a matter of how much they contain Harden.
Yes. Right.
That's, yeah. And speaking of containing Harden, so I was watching the post-game interview with Mike D'Antoni, and he was saying that, you know, in the last 10 seconds of the game, you know, you got he was about to call a timeout.
Yeah.
But the timeout, he just said, get the ball to James.
Yeah, so...
But James already had the ball, so he's like, forget about it.
But honestly, at that point, don't they know enough to get the ball to James in that situation?
Absolutely. You know,
yeah, you don't need a timeout to do with that.
For example, how did the game wind up in overtime in the first place? Because Chris Paul, who is kind of interesting, is he aging? Is he regressing? I don't know. But he had the – I mean, Chris Paul is someone who I would trust, you know, the ball in the hands of to make the right play, a great decision. He drove the ball right into a jump ball.
Yeah. And you know what? Do credit Klay Thompson because he got his hand in there. He got his hand in there to force that jump ball situation. Remember, Klay Thompson is one of the best defenders in the league.
Yes, sir. All defense.
All defense. So, you know, and some may argue he may be the best all-around player on that team because of his defensive prowess. So, it's interesting.
And also, let's talk a little bit about Boston and Milwaukee. The Bucks took the last two games of that series. The game three, game two was a rout, but game three was a 7-point win for the Bucks. They score 123 in both their wins. Can Boston slow down the Bucks in game four?
I hope so, because you know it's like the playoffs were in danger of being in danger if. You know, if Houston would have fell 0-3, I mean, that would have took the taste out of my mouth, though, if I would have seen Houston fall 0-3. So, if I'm just by looking at Boston, which people were already crowning Boston as being the Eastern Conference champion towards the beginning of the season, especially based on their performance they did last year against LeBron James and the Cavs. So, especially with the addition of Kyrie Irving, I'm shocked to see them down 2-1. And in danger of going down 3-1, you know, which I hope, you know, for the sake of just, you know, being a fan of the game. I don't want to see that.
Right.
I want to see, like, right now the playoffs, you know, everybody's at 2-1. You know, there's no 3-0s.
Yes.
You know, everything is good. You know, I'm hoping everything goes at least 6 to 7 games. And, do I like the way that Kyrie exited the Cavaliers? No. But I don't wish that man to get backdoor swept out the playoffs either.
Right.
You know, it's just for the sake of seeing good competition, you know. But that's – I'm hoping, you know – that's a hypothesis. That's intelligent hope that Boston will win this game coming up tomorrow.
Well, here's the interesting thing about the playoffs. And P.J. LaCarlissimo said it. I was listening to the Toronto-Philly game on the way here. On ESPN radio, and they do a great job. He said that games 2, 4, and 6 are always the more interesting games because those are the games where you have to kind of make what's called the adjustments,
right?
Or whatever, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know exactly what. Yeah, I see where you're going.
Yeah. So what we saw in games 2 and 3 from Milwaukee, especially in 3. It wasn't really an adjustment that Milwaukee made. It was more so of the adjustments their players made.
Absolutely.
With Antetokounmpo, he's going to get his. He had 32 points and didn't shoot a 3-point shot. All of his points came from in the paint and on the rebounds, which this is what he does.
Real old school.
But they were hitting the 3-point shot, which is what they've been good at all year. And the Celtics just couldn't do anything about that.
Right.
You know, and so now it's going to be interesting to see game 4 on your home court. You're expected to win. What adjustments do you need to make?
Well, I need to.
And Jason Tatum.
I'm about to say that.
Tatum is the guy. I'm sorry, Lee. Yeah. You take that.
I'm going to need Jason Tatum to make an adjustment from 2 points to like 20 points.
Yes.
My goodness. You've been training with Kobe during the offseason. Everybody knows. We're going to want to see some improvement here.
He averaged 16 points a game in the first series.
Man. Now he's like, Middleton give you that much of a problem?
And I didn't think that Middleton was a defender. And I mean, Middleton did go to, he was an all-star this year.
Absolutely.
So obviously he was He is that second running guy to Greek Freak.
Right, but so, Jason Tatum is just looking awful right now.
Yeah, he is, and I think he's averaging like maybe 5 a game.
Man,
it's unbelievable just how just the turnaround of that. And I understand it's the Pacers without Victor Oladipo, but still, come on, man, he has to have more. It cannot be Kyrie Irving and Al Horford. Jalen Brown's played well, too.
Right, yeah, they're getting production from everybody else, but Jason Tatum, you're in the starting lineup.
Yep, and he was supposed to be that guy.
Absolutely. You know? Man, he was supposed to be the heir apparent. You know, if Kyrie Irving were to, you know, up and leave, they're like, we're not worried about it because we have Jason Tatum and all these other studs.
So this is what a point guard does, right, Leon? What Kyrie Irving will probably have to do is try to set him up with some baskets, easy baskets. Because why is Tatum struggling? Because he's taking up non-field goal percentage shots. He's taking up tough shots.
Yeah, they're forcing him into low percentage shots.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that you got to credit the defense for that.
Exactly.
And quick note, Kawhi Leonard so far averaging 38 points a game in this series with Philadelphia.
Man, he has been the absolute unsung hero for the Toronto Raptors.
I don't think he's unsung. I think he's been very sung.
Yeah.
I think he's been very sung, and I think the Clippers are singing it too. I think a lot of people are singing that. You know, we know he's going to get the ball, and certainly enough, he gets it. You know, guys, we were talking a little bit about referees. You know how they're inserting themselves into every sport. Well, guess what? They're inserting themselves into horse racing.
Yes, sir,
I don't know if you saw this yesterday with the Kentucky Derby, where Maximum Security. Well, after that result, Maximum Security entered the transfer portal. We'll see him again at the Belmont in a little later on. But it's weird that the horse who won the Kentucky Derby had it taken away from him on a referee ruling. Do you agree with this or not?
Yes, I do, and I'm going to tell you why. Because I actually have the ruling here.
Okay.
It's from the Kentucky legislature. On the governing horse racing filing, Section 12, it says if a leading horse or any other horse in a race swerves or is ridden to either side so as to interfere with, intimidate, or impede any other horse or jockey, or to cause the same result, this action shall be deemed a foul if, in the opinion of a steward, a foul alters the finish of a race, an offending horse may be disqualified by the stewards. He did.
Okay, all right. I have a question. Yes. I have a question. How does a horse intimidate another horse?
I don't know.
Does he say, hey, your mom belongs to the glue factory?
Yeah, I know. Yeah. When they use the word intimidate, I said intimidate. Wow. Like, what did he do?
No.
I mean, I don't get it. But, yeah, you know what?
Trash talking. We have Mr. Ed running around running here.
When I saw Maximum Security, he was clearly the best horse in the race because he nearly led the entire way. I saw this.
Right.
I saw the race yesterday. He nearly led the entire way. But he got into the way of War of Will.
Okay.
Who was not the actual winner. It was, what was the winner? 65-1
favorite. Country House.
Country House, yeah. Country House. Country House was actually deemed the winner because he came in second.
Right.
But it was War of Will who was impeded, but then two other horses were affected by it.
Okay.
And basically what he did was he comes in, like, into an angle. He's already in the lead, so all he had to really do was stay where he was.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they're saying that the reason why Maximum Security did what he did was because he was affected by the crowd noise. That's what they're saying, That's what they're saying.
Do we need a horse whisperer to tell us that?
Exactly, right? So, yes, according to the rules, it was a foul. I hate that they took that away from him.
Right.
And because, I mean, basically, are we going to say that we took the Triple Crown away from Maximum, from a horse?
Right.
You know, I'm not saying Country House doesn't have a shot. He does. I mean, listen.
Yeah, but
now you're on the clock. You know,
now's
your turn. Now you have to prove you were 65-1 favorite, which was the second most in history.
I know some bettors must have gone. Oh, Vegas got killed. If somebody got a good bet on that, they were. They absolutely got creamed on that, but the sharps will make it up somewhere along the line.
Well, one of the most awkward proverbs, it says, sometimes you win some and you lose some all in the same race.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's what happened. And that's what happened. And I do feel bad for the owners of the horse, but...
Yeah, the horse doesn't know what happened.
Yeah, the horse doesn't know. He's just running.
Exactly.
So we think.
Well, yeah. Unless you've seen a Pixar movie, maybe.
And the funny thing about this is that you know, I'm going to the Kentucky Derby next year.
Next season. Okay.
Next year, 2020. Okay. It is my mom's dream vacation. It is my dream place to go. That's all she wants to do.
To go to Louisville.
To go to Louisville and go and watch the Kentucky Derby.
Well, let's see. We're talking, this is Louisville, Kentucky. There is that. Mm-hmm. There's the Louisville Slugger Museum.
Yep. She doesn't care for baseball.
The Muhammad Ali Museum, I think, is there.
Okay.
And that may
be. That's what I want to go watch. I want to go see that. I do want to go do the Muhammad Ali Museum.
And that might be it.
Yeah.
For Louisville, Kentucky.
Yep. But that's all she wants to see.
Okay.
That's all she wants to do.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, we've got some, let's see. I think we still got some time here to talk about a couple other things. Yes, we do. So let's talk NHL hockey. Again, those playoffs are going on right now. Looking over the standings, Dallas with a 3-2 lead in their series. San Jose 2-2 on Colorado. Columbus and Boston are even up. And the last one is Carolina sweeping the Islanders 4-0. Carolina, the bunch of jerks is what they've been calling themselves. And do the Hurricanes have a shot to get to the Stanley Cup? And if it is the Hurricanes, it's one of those non-traditional franchises, non-historical franchises that the NHL likes to prop up. Would this be a turning point in the NHL if a team from, say, the Southern Belt, the Sun Belt, a place where expansion in that area is viewed, you know, not very warily?
Yeah.
What would that do to the game if the Carolina Hurricanes could win this?
Expand it.
Right.
I mean, that's the only thing you really can say. Listen, Carolina, they do play like a bunch of jerks, right?
Yeah, exactly.
They are good. They're good. They're tough. They're physical. And they can outman you. And sometimes, if you don't have that physical toughness, you know, like the Philadelphia Flyers did, the Broad Street Bullies back in the 70s.
Right.
Oh, man, people hated to play them. Why? Because they were so tough.
Exactly, and you couldn't beat them.
And you couldn't beat them, right? And that's what Carolina resembles right now. You asked the question, are they the team, can they get to the Stanley Cup? I don't see why they can't win it all. I don't really see anybody. I mean, Colorado, I think, may have a chance, but I just think Carolina is just too good.
That's like Butler winning an NCAA championship.
Yeah, it is though.
Yeah. Well, again, I'm from Boston, so of course I'd like to see the Celtics make another run at it, but the Bruins make another run at it.
Yeah.
But
they're in a tough series with
Columbus, and that, so
they won yesterday. They're up 3-2.
Boy, let's see. The Red Sox won the last World Series. Patriots won the last Super Bowl. Could we see a grand slam sweep from Boston in the four big sports?
No, because Boston, the Celtics would get to the finals, but if Golden State is there, because the Golden State Houston winner, I think, would win the NBA championship.
Okay.
I think you've seen that one. So I think Boston could make it to the NBA finals, but I don't think they would win it. The Bruins have a great chance of winning the Stanley Cup, but, man, they would have to get through Carolina.
That's the thing.
That's going to be a tough one.
That is going to be a very tough one. So,
I was going to bring up, we do have the issue of scandal going on right now with the NCAA, you know, my favorite subject.
Oh, yes. Here we go. Yeah, I believe I know what you're talking about. They just announced that they are going to investigate the Arizona Wildcat program. Still trying to find, it seems like we have just scratched the top of the surface with this thing, and there is just a mammoth iceberg just lurking underneath that could bring the whole thing down. But, I mean, at the end, I mean, we know it's there. We know that this is what NCAA basketball is like. We know what NCAA football is like, but we choose to suspend our disbelief, to suspend our belief, because at the end of the day, well, if everyone's doing it, then doesn't that make it all equal? Doesn't that even it out and gives us a kind of a strange form of parity?
Equal, yes. Legal, no.
No. Yeah, that's the thing.
Just that one pothole of legality there, you know.
Yeah.
The federal investigation,
right?
You know, just I'm just, you know, it's like every week we hear about, you know, Zion. I remember when I called John up
about 2 weeks ago, I was like, hey, you know, Zion got caught in some type of scandal with Nike. Oh, so already, huh?
Yeah, exactly. He didn't even get there.
And now you've got, you come out, Coach Miller has come out, and they think that he's paid DeAndre Ayton.
Oh, yeah. $10,000 a month.
Yeah, right. Like he was getting. He was on salary.
Oh, yeah.
payroll.
And of course, over at LSU, Will Wade is not out of the woods yet, even though after he was suspended, he's back as their head coach.
You know what's funny? And we always say this, man. Look, we think that the player should be paid.
Absolutely.
It's just a matter of how you're going to do it.
But until that ruling comes down, it's illegal.
Right.
Okay? It's illegal. And not only will the players pay for it, and really the players are not going to really pay for this because they'll probably be in the NBA, NFL, NHL, whatever. It's the school that's going to pay for it. Like, you look at the Fab Five and everything that they did, those 2 years, non-existent now,
mm-hmm.
you know, because of the scandal involving Chris Webber.
Right.
So it kind of hurts the school more so than the athletes itself.
But does it really hurt the school? They're trying
to, as far as wins go.
But you can take wins out of a scorebook. You can't take wins out of people's memory. Unless you get the thing from Men in Black, bring everyone in here. Okay, you're gonna forget all that. You know.
But this is the question, though: should the schools have to refund the revenue that they earned, or you know, quote unquote? Earned
mm-hmm.
during an NCAA tournament or whatnot, or from, you know, ticket sales, or, I mean, you know, when you start digging into the pockets of the schools, because, you know, these schools do benefit from these athletes, you know, producing, because, you know, like, I mean, it's safe to say that these schools are looking like NASA technology. I mean, you go to Georgia Tech, like a state-of-the-art center, and that's primarily because of the football and basketball program.
And also because they get their free 30-second PSA in the middle of the broadcast to tout their university, tout what it has.
I mean, look at Alabama. In the state of Alabama, you see the facility that they have set up for that because of what the football team paid for.
Yeah, it's impressive. I've been there. I was actually out on Alabama last month.
Right?
Did some softball out there.
Absolutely.
And admittedly, that softball park is, out of the four I've been to, it's frankly at the bottom. South Carolina's was very, very nice. I liked Georgia's. Well, the thing of it is, so South Carolina and Georgia, they have elevators. You know you're in someplace interesting when you're in a softball facility and you have to take an elevator to the press box.
Wow. So, you know, college is...
I keep wanting you to come with me, Daniel, next time I go to Georgia for softball. You need to come.
Yeah, I will, definitely.
So these schools are benefiting greatly from these athletes. So, I mean, it's only right that the athletes benefit greatly from their performance.
That's exactly the point.
And like I said, I gave you my theory. Just bring back the EA, NCAA, and football and basketball. Get the players in and reimburse them for the likeness.
They're not going to do that. The NCAA is too stingy when it comes to money.
That's why I don't play PlayStation.
Right. So
they still want to play the Spider-Man game, though. That looks really
good. It's pretty dope, too. I haven't got it yet, but I'm going to get it. But they got Iron Man coming out this summertime. Man. Oh, my goodness. And VR, that's going to be
sweet. That is going to be sweet. Yeah.
But the question is, okay, so say, for example, you go off and you pay the player, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what do you do about the badminton players? The softball players?
Right.
See, that's
the volleyball players.
Yes, that's the problem.
Who's clear?
That's where the problem's going
to
be.
Right. Everybody wants to get reimbursed. Who, you know, in volleyball is clearly not what's carrying the load. I mean, so therefore, you know, do we just blatantly keep it honest? Like, hey, you know, football players get $10,000 a month. The rest of you guys will get $500 a month. You're lucky that you're even getting anything at all because you're not really bringing in revenue. If you guys bring revenue, I mean, just keep it real.
Mm-hmm.
Let's be honest. If you bring revenue to the school, if you guys get good and people start paying more attention to you guys, then we start paying you more money.
Right. That's the thing. You know, not many people are going to give revenue in based on your beach volleyball program.
No.
Or your main volleyball program. Well, we're wrapping it up here in the last three guys to do a podcast. It's time for our 60 seconds to talk about whatever is on your mind. Leon, let's start with you.
Okay. Well, you know, I mean, I'm a staunch NBA fan, you know, have been my whole life, you know, as well as NFL. But I'm questioning coaching.
Okay.
The importance of coaching. Right now, it's making national headlines on who's going to be the Lakers' next head coach. People are saying Tyronn Lue. Some people are saying Monty Williams. Some people are saying
they're going for it.
With Tyronn Lue.
Well, right. Of course, yeah, because he's LeBron's guy.
Yeah.
Right, which is only right, mm-hmm. you know. But at the same time, does it really matter in the NFL? I mean, NBA, does it really, really matter?
I think so.
I don't either. Let me give you a prime example. 1987, you had this guy about it. This one guy, you know, he's Dave Robinson was his name.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this one man made a difference at Navy. I don't think Navy's really been much in 32 years.
No, not since, no. He's been the one person since Navy. Right. He's been their one good player.
Right.
In all that time.
I remember once upon a time in 2011 when a team by the name of the Miami Heat who boasted one of the most marquee lineups this game has ever seen lost to Dallas Mavericks in 6 games, right? And this one commentator guy named by the name of Skip Bayless, you may have heard of him. Oh, man, he creamed him. Creamed him. And then, you know, so it came time to shut out blame, and, you know, LeBron James' name was the first on the list. But then people asked, you know, Jay Crawford asked, well, what about Eric Spoelstra? What about him? They said if they won, he would get little to no credit, so therefore when they lose, he gets little to no blame.
Exactly.
So it just makes you wonder, like, man, how relevant are these coaches for real? You know, some people say that, hey, Red Auerbach, greatest coach ever, you know, out of your area, Boston.
I thought for a minute there, I thought you said out of my era, and I'm like, now wait a minute.
Yeah, but, you know, you're not that old. You don't even look that old, man. You know, but you people might say that Red Auerbach, greatest basketball coach ever. But then again, when he sat down, Bill Russell became the player coach, and they won anyway without him.
Right.
You know, so I'm just saying, though, you know, let's go with Eric Spoelstra. Well, Eric Spoelstra be the only coach in NBA history to have gone to the finals 4 times, won twice, and still not make the Hall of Fame as a coach. Would you call Eric Spoelstra Hall of Famer coach?
I would agree with that. I don't think he's going to be. I don't think he's going to make Hall of Fame as a coach.
No, I don't. That's hard to say. I can't make him a Hall of Famer.
It's just like,
too many good. He's 3 All Stars.
But that's Leon's point.
Yeah.
Do the All Stars make the coach, or does the coach make the All Stars?
And that's because you go to the NFL. The NFL can go somewhat, but then you got this one team called the Patriots that just have like one Pro Bowler,
yeah,
on offense, and yeah, they're winning everything.
And they win everything, right?
Yeah.
Well, two if you want to count Gronk.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, right.
Gronk's gone now. Yeah.
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 And I doubt very seriously they do no less than 12-4 next year.
Okay.
You know, I'm just being honest, and I believe that coaching could give credit to a lot of good coaching as far as the NFL is concerned, but in basketball. Basketball's a players' league, and I think there's just nothing to get around that. We see this also in NCAA.
Uh huh.
You know, to a certain degree, because you got teams like I'll always bring them up, Butler. You know,
yeah.
You had teams like the John Wall led 2009 Wildcats with DeMarcus Cousins, Eric Bledsoe, and 3 other players went to the NBA. John Wall, Eric Bledsoe, DeMarcus Cousins, and that matter of fact, every single player, including a 6-man, went to the NBA.
Yep.
Every last starting five, and they didn't go past the Sweet 16.
Okay. So. Before we get into mine, Leon, have you seen Endgame yet?
No comment.
Okay. Well, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because the Russo brothers said that there was effectively a 2-week moratorium on spoilers. So that is over right now. So here's what I'm going to do right now. The big question, when you talk about the next set of Marvel movies, they have greenlit a Black Widow movie starring Scarlett Johansson. Problem is, well, she died during Endgame. So how are they going to do this? Is it going to be a prequel? No, there's 2 ways they can bring her back. 2 ways. The first way is easy. We know that Bruce Banner tried to bring her back, but we don't know if Tony Stark tried to do it as well. Now, the second way is a little bit more complicated. First of all, we know that Captain America, Steve Rogers, went back in time to put the stones back where he found them. And that would have been a movie in itself. That would have been a real good movie in itself. Now, remember, the whole thing about the Soul Stone is a soul for a soul. Yes. So if he's given the Soul Stone back, does he get a soul in return?
Ah.
And that could... could be how Scarlett Johansson comes back as the Black Widow. Question is where, you know, it's just a lot of different things going on right now, but that is one of the things that I wanted to talk about. Also, in Endgame, you may not know this, it is a star-studded cast, probably the biggest stars ever in one movie. It's got everybody, Robert Redford, Tilda Swinton, Gwyneth Paltrow, Michelle Pfeiffer, John Morgan. Wait, what? Yes, I am in the movie. I have a throwaway cameo scene that is—it's right there. Paul Rudd is walking out, and he sees the whole all the tablets for the disappeared. I am an extra. I am in that scene. I survived Thanos' snap. I am in the movie. Yes, it's the biggest movie ever, and I have an extremely small part in it. And I'm not going to let anyone forget that for the time being. Go, Daniel.
Okay, so 17 months ago, Ryan Shazier suffered a horrific spinal injury, so severe that the doctors didn't even think he would walk again. Actually, they gave him a 20% chance of even walking. Well, I'm going to say this. If they're not in your skin, don't let nobody tell you what you can't do. Ryan Shazier got married this weekend, okay? And guess what he was doing at his wedding? Dancing. He was dancing, which means that he has to be walking, right?
Yeah, that helps.
Yeah, that really helps. So I'm just so impressed. I saw what this guy went through. I saw the hit that he did, and I mean, that right there in itself could have took anybody out. Right, we understand football is a dangerous sport, man, but this guy has been fighting so much just to even take a step, mm-hmm. and I am proud of what he's went through. I'm proud of his road to recovery, and I'm even more proud and excited that he was able to marry the love of his life and get a chance to dance. And the song that he was dancing to was Montel Jordan's This Is How We Do It. So now it was an upbeat song.
Yeah, it wasn't a slow dance. It was a slow song.
It was an upbeat song. Man, kudos to you, Ryan Shazier. Get better. Man, you are a successful story. You are a success story. You did the improbable, I guess you can say, but it wasn't improbable to you. It was possible.
Exactly. So shout out to you.
And spoiler alert, next Sunday, I will bring out my essay.
Okay.
I will bring out an essay, and it will be about Marshawn Lynch.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Interesting. Interesting. Well, that's going to wrap us up here for the last three guys to do a podcast, our 32nd edition. John Morgo, Daniel Bolton, Leon Brown here. Want to thank WNBA Atlanta Dream head coach Nikki Collin for joining us, talking about the Dream and what their prospects look like in the 2019 season. Hopefully, we'll have her back on further on in the later edge of the season. We will be back in 7 days, talk more NBA basketball, talk a lot of other stuff happening here in the world of sports. So you know what to do. You know to like us. You know to make comments and tell everyone here about the last three guys to do a podcast. We'll be back with you in 7 more days. Talk more Atlanta sports. Everything here. We are the last three guys to do a podcast. It's hard work and sacrifice.